atyahara pravyasascha prajalpo niyamagraha janasangascha lalyamcha sadbhir bhaktir vinashyati. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. 1. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. 2. Over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. 3. Talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. 4. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. Or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5. Associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6. Being greedy for mundane achievements. Okay, so then on over-collecting now. Eating more than necessary, collecting. The main problem confronting the conditioned souls is the repetition of birth, old age, disease, and death. In the material world, one has to work for the maintenance of the body and soul. But how can one perform such work in a way that is favorable for the execution of Krishna consciousness? Everyone requires possessions such as food, grains, cloth, money, and other things necessary for the maintenance of the body. But one should not collect more than necessary for his actual basic needs. If this natural principle is followed, there will be no difficulty in maintaining the body. According to nature's arrangement, living entities lower on the evolutionary scale do not eat or collect more than necessary. Consequently, in the animal kingdom, there is generally no economic problem or scarcity of necessities. If a bag of rice is placed in a public area, the birds will come and eat a few grains and go away. A human being, however, will take away the whole bag. He will eat all his stomach can hold, and then try to keep the rest in storage. According to scriptures, this collection of more than necessary, atyahara, is prohibited. Now the entire world is suffering because of it. Collecting and eating more than necessary also causes prayasha, or unnecessary endeavor. By God's arrangement, anyone in any part of the world can live very peacefully if he has some land and a milk cow. There is no need for man to move from one place to another to earn a livelihood, for one can produce food grains locally and get milk from cows. That can solve all economic problems. Unfortunately, man has been given higher intelligence for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, or the understanding of God, one's relationship with Him, and the ultimate goal of life, love of God. Unfortunately, so-called civilized man, not caring for God realization, utilizes his intelligence to get more than necessary and simply eat to satisfy the tongue. By God's arrangement, there is sufficient scope for the production of milk and grains for human beings all over the world. But instead of using their higher intelligence to cultivate God consciousness, so-called intelligent men misuse their intelligence to produce many unnecessary and unwanted things. Thus, factories, slaughterhouses, brothels, and liquor shops are opened. If people are advised not to collect too many things, eat too much, or work unnecessarily to possess artificial amenities, they think they are being advised to return to a primitive way of life. Generally, people do not like to accept plain living. That is their unfortunate position. Okay. Then, so there's a little more here. Human life is meant for God realization, and the human being is given higher intelligence for this purpose. Those who believe that this higher intelligence is meant to maintain a higher state should follow the instructions of the Vedic literatures. By taking such instructions from higher authorities, one can actually become situated in perfect knowledge and give real meaning to life. So here, this principle of atyahara and payasha that are being established here. So then Rupa Goswami is saying these things will, if we're endeavored in too much, then they can ruin one's spiritual life. They can be a great impediment. Because if you need more than you require, that necessarily means you have to work more to get more. The position is that a certain amount is going to come to you. That's your natural amount. By a natural amount of work. So you can get more, but then you're taking from your stock that would naturally come over a spread out period of time. It's just like, let's say you have money in the bank and you're supposed to take a certain amount every month, and then that will last you for the next, you know, so many years. You could go into the bank and take more than you require at the time. And you can do it, but if it's there, but it means then you have less later. So it's a dangerous thing. So all this shortage and all that means that there are people on both sides. The persons who are taking more than they need are getting that, and they're having. And then there are those who then, because of somebody taking more than is required, that means other people have less than required. So those are the people that before took more than they needed. And that, so it'll just keep switching back and forth. You know, today you're the man with more, and the other person is the man with less. And then tomorrow you'll be the man with less, and they'll be the man with more. So this is going on in the society. So, therefore, it's not important, you know, to collect more or to have things that are unnecessary. If they're necessary, then you use. But otherwise, you have to see that life is not artificial. That it is what is necessary, what's required, and that is kept. The unfortunate thing, as Prabhupada points out, is that the modern society has created so much unnecessary things. And if you don't have those things, then people will say, oh, you're being primitive. Because that's a symptom of advancement, is that you have all these different things. So much stuff you have, so much unnecessary things. Of course, now people say they're very necessary, but it's not. But we've gained on one side, you lose on another. Prabhupada says some land, a cow. So we see is that the very poor people, they live in the village, and they're unfortunate. They have to eat the natural things that come off the land. They have to drink the milk that comes from the cow. So they have to put up with, you know, food grains that actually have some nutritional value, milk that has some taste in it, actually has some cream in it. You know, they have to put up with all this. Then as they advance more, they move to the cities, they get more artificial things. Then they have less, you know, then the milk is then, you know, dealt with, treated, who knows what it's milk of, as long as it's milk, you know, as long as it's like that. And like this, and then their vegetables and all these different things, and they're created and look great, have no taste, but you know, whatever it is, advancement is, you know, there must be some sacrifice for advancement. Then, when if you make it, you're able to get farther up on the ladder, then you're able to have a little piece of land in the back of your yard in which you can grow some of your own vegetables, and that's considered, very aristocratic, is that you have your little sabji garden, and then you invite your friends over, and then you prepare something yourself for them, something from your garden. And it's a whole center of the activities and communication, is that, you know, your things from your garden. This is very special and unique. You have enough money to have a little bit of land that you can do that. So then, but if you say, well, why not go back to that rural or simple lifestyle, then people say, oh, that's backwards. So it's a very unfortunate thing. So the devotees then, seeing through this, then they're not worried what people will say and this and that. They know how much they require to be comfortable. They live at that level, and they don't worry that the rest of society approves of it or not. They know that they're comfortable, and that's good enough for them. Then they can use their time for Krishna consciousness. So he's saying that if you do more, you eat more, collect more, you have to work more, then where's the time for Krishna consciousness? So therefore the devotees will see that balance, see how much they have to work, and see that their spiritual life is going on. And they're not so worried if others feel that they're, you know, progressive or backwards or like that. You know, they know in their mind that what they're doing is proper. So then it goes on. If one is saying it's natural, it's what you require, you know, just to live, but then natural, we see, probably gives the example of the animals. They don't do this. They take what they need, and leave the rest. You know, they'll come back tomorrow. If it hasn't, others haven't needed so much, there'll still be some grains in that rice bag. You know, and if not, if there's been a lot of birds and other animals, then they'll be gone, but something will be there. It means all these birds, all these animals are eating. And they're not collecting. Somehow or another, they're alive. You know, they live. You know, we say elephant lives for, you know, 90 years, and this bird lives for, you know, 60 years. And so that means every day for that many years, they've gotten something to eat. Otherwise, they wouldn't be alive. They'd be dead. It's a very simple formula. So that they're alive and animals are alive means they're getting what they require. So the process does work. One collects only what one needs, and that's it. One doesn't take more. It does work. The whole world is working on it. You know, billions and billions of animals and bugs and others are working on the principle, and they're alive. But somehow or another, man can't, you know. So this is an important thing. So even in the Vedic culture, then amongst especially amongst the Brahmins, then they would tend to keep less than more. They could keep more. They could keep a year's supply of food grains, or they could keep, you know, a month's supply, or they could keep 3 days' supply, or they could keep only 1 day's supply. And each one that was less was considered better than the other, because then they were more dependent upon the Lord and upon what will happen. And we see people were alive. They didn't die out, you know, somehow or another. They seem to have a head start. There's 1 billion of them in India. And even though India's lost size, if you count it in Bangladesh and Pakistan, you know, then you know, they'd be way beyond China. You know. So you know, they didn't die somehow or another, you know, living this primitive lifestyle and all that. So therefore, one can have some faith that you just keep what you need, and you'll be okay. Krishna will provide. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.9, Sri Suta Goswami describes the proper human dharma in this way. Dharmasya yapavargasya narto tai yo pakalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labhaya hi smrita. All occupational engagements, dharma, are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. It should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service, dharma, should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. The first step in human civilization consists of occupational engagements performed according to the scriptural injunctions. The higher intelligence of human being should be trained to understand basic dharma. In human society, there are various religious conceptions characterized as Hindu, Christian, Hebrew, Mohammedan, Buddhism, and so on. For without religion, human society is no better than animal society. As stated above, dharmasya yapavargasya narto tai opakalpate. Religion is meant for attaining emancipation, not for getting bread. Sometimes human society manufactures a system of so-called religion aimed at material advancement, and that is far from the purpose of true dharma. Religion entails understanding the laws of God, because the proper execution of these laws ultimately leads one out of material entanglement. That is the true purpose of religion. Unfortunately, people accept religion for material prosperity because of atyahara, or an excessive desire for such prosperity. True religion, however, instructs people to be satisfied with the bare necessities of life while cultivating Krishna consciousness. Even though we require economic development, true religion allows it only for supplying the bare necessities of material existence. Jivasya tattva jigyasa. The real purpose of life is to inquire about the absolute truth. If our endeavor, prayasha, is not to inquire about the absolute truth, we will simply increase our endeavor to satisfy our artificial needs. A spiritual aspirant should avoid mundane endeavor. So this position of dharma, human society can't live without religion. Religion is necessary. There must be some code of conduct, some code of interaction that must always be there. And this code then should come from God. It shouldn't be made up by the living entities, because otherwise it will be imperfect. Because dharma or religion means everything already has its dharma. So you have to learn what that dharma is. Every living entity has a dharma. Every item in this material world has a dharma. And so therefore we must learn what that dharma is. In other words, dharma means its inherent nature. And so that inherent nature has been created by God. So those are the laws of God. So we speak of laws of God. That means is what is the nature of everything and how it should be dealt with. So then we see. Religion doesn't mean just ritual. Religion means understanding how to deal with everything and see everything in relationship to God by following God's laws. So with that, then we see is that the purpose is actually to please God, to be somehow or another connected to God. In whatever we do, everything we do should have its connection to that. So then, if that's the purpose, economics is not the purpose of religion. Though nowadays, Prabhupada's pointing out, due to desire for excessive gain, therefore religion is used to get economic development. Because religion will give economic development, but they create the whole emphasis in religion is to get that economic development. But that automatically comes when something is used according to its nature and moves according to its nature, it automatically works. It just works that way. That's the way it functions. If it's done, it will give you a result like that. It's just you deal with somebody properly, you get a good reaction. If you deal with something properly, you'll get like you take an item. Let's say you deal with your computer properly, you'll get out of it what you want. You deal with your printer properly, it'll print things for you. You deal improperly, it won't. So dealing properly, that means the religion of the printer you're following. Right? And if you don't act, then it won't. So that's it. It's everything has its nature. So your interaction with others, how you eat, how you live, how you dress, everything that you do has a nature, and those natures are established by God. So if you follow those, automatically economic development comes. You know, it's just like if you want to know how is it possible without, you look in your closet, right? Look in your closet, full of all kinds of junk, unlimited junk. You know, if you look around and go around and go to every item in your house, and contemplate, do I ever use this? What is its purpose in this house? You'll find you have so much stuff that never really gets used or that at that. Some things you don't even deal with. Rarely you deal with. Something more valuable, then you may deal, put it in place. Other things, so much stuff that's never even dealt with. Like that. So then, but how did all that come? Right? It just came. Right? Maybe you endeavored for it, maybe you didn't. Someone gave it to you, came across it, so many different things. It just happens. So gaining things is not the big problem. They just come of their own accord. You do your duties, they come. So here, it's being pointed out, is therefore, religion shouldn't be used for economic development. It should be used for spiritual life. If you use it for spiritual life, then it comes up nicely. And if you don't use it for spiritual life, then so much is there. You know? But then whenever you have to, you know, I don't know, here, you've ever had to shift houses, that's when you really learn how much you have and how much you really need. You know? Then it kind of becomes obvious. It's just, wow, it's amazing. You know, like Guru Jampu was telling me the other day, you know, he's packing up, he's got 30 boxes of stuff. That's his. He's wondering, what is all this stuff? You know? And so then, you know, like that, then you can actually calculate, how much do I really require? So then you understand, therefore I may be making more money than is required to get all this, like I don't need all this stuff. So then you decide, okay, then how to better use the money, or if it comes, then that's another thing. So many ways you can use your money. But I should not be over-endeavoring. You know, if I'm really working hard, over-endeavoring, and I have so much stuff, then maybe I don't have to. You know, so one has to start, one has to consider and look at one's life. Is that what one has, what work one's doing, does he require that? If he does, yes, one must do. But if he doesn't, one shouldn't do more. That's the point. So it's not... Another point comes up is one has to know what is the requirement. Like sometimes we get so many things that we would have. So like nowadays, people, they spend their money on all kinds of stuff like that, but their possessions that they have actually have no value. Right? You have so many gizmos and gadgets in the house and this and that in the house. But if you really required some funds, it's worth nothing. What can you do with it? We see in India previously, then whatever they had in the house was of value. You know, people, they'd eat off of silver plates. You know, one plate weighed 1 kilo. It's a kilo of silver. A glass weighed 400 grams. And you had so much of that. And then you had your regular eating stuff, and then you had special stuff when you had guests. So they would invest in all that. Nowadays, what's your, you know, china plate going to get you? Even if it's some very special porcelain, this, that, you know, costs lots of money. Well, useless. Your fork worth, you know, $100. Useless. You can't get anything for it. If it was made out of silver, you can get something for it. You know? So, therefore, one sees is that people nowadays, even though they're saying they require this, you're saying we're primitive, but what's so primitive about eating off of silver instead of eating off of mud? You know? Like that. Or the women, they have so much all kinds of funny, stupid jewelry. Before, it was real. It was real stones, real gold. It means one girl. Married, she wore a kilo of gold. And that's just what she got at that time. You know, so by the time she's mature, she had 10 kilos of gold stashed away. How much is 10 kilos of gold worth? Right? It's not cheap. So the whole thing is, what is it that has? I mean, we don't even know what's real. We say we need this, we need that, but what is it, you know? It all falls apart, goes away. The other thing doesn't go away. You know? It doesn't break down. You have a stone and something to grind on it. You know, it takes a long time to wear one of those out, you know? Good ones, you know, about this thick. Some of them are this thick. You know, you'd have to spend probably 10, 20 years to wear one of those out, you know? Didn't use any electricity. Like that, you got a little exercise. Plus, it grinds a lot better than the modern grinders. You know? So, whatever. These are just, you know, general things. They may or may not be practical. But the point is that the things have swerved so much from the Vedic standards or the religious standards. You know, value meant gold. You know, so that's the nature of money. Money means gold. But people don't have gold nowadays. I even heard that the country here, what gold they did have to back up their money, they sold it. Right? So there is no gold backing up your pieces of plastic like that. You know? It's just faith. People have faith that that piece of plastic with the funny little faces on it is worth something. And since everybody has that faith, it works. But in actuality, it's not even worth the plastic it's written on. Right? There is no gold backing it up. So many countries, there's not enough gold backing it up. Because faith is very high in the standard. But, you know, so these kind of things are there. The standards have changed. So it's not that's the problem. Religion means you know what is the nature of something, and you know what its value is, you know what it requires, and then you can endeavor to fulfill those needs. Nowadays, the needs are artificial. We don't know what we want, what we need, all these things. So it makes it very difficult. Very difficult. So Prabhupada's pointing out is, therefore, we look at it, what does Krishna say, what does Krishna want? See that, see our position, and try to make it match. And therefore, live a lifestyle that is comfortable for us, but at the same time, we're not over-endeavoring, we're not wasting our time, and we're having sufficient time for Krishna consciousness. Any questions on this part? Or? Yes.
Maharaj, this is maybe discussing over-endeavor for something mundane. But is it possible also to devote when you're in devotional service?
In Sama, you can say yes and you can say no. Means anything done for Krishna then is never lost. So therefore, whatever endeavor is done, it's there. You know, it's different from material gain. Material gain, you gain it and then it's lost. It goes away. You get whatever it is and it goes away. You get more, it goes away. It's like you having a, what do you call it? You know, like these things that you put the, what they call it? I don't even remember. A little, like, hourglass. Yeah, and the sand goes. But if the top was open, you could just put more sand in, it just keeps going. Put in more, it goes. So you get more money, and it goes away. Get more, it goes away. You know? So it's, but devotional service is not lost. Over-endeavor could be found is if you have a plan, and it's your plan, and you want to do this, and despite all obstacles and everybody telling you that maybe this isn't the best plan for Krishna, and it's maybe by the reactions you're getting, it's not, you're determined to go on. So you have to distinguish between determination and stubbornness. They're two different things. Like that. Stubbornness is I decide I'm going that direction, and you know, and nothing's going to stop me. You know, so the first thing I run into is this wall. So then I will make a hole in the wall. You know, then the next thing is then I'm going to run into the next wall. You know, and so then like this, I'm going to have quite a few walls. So this wall I may or may not have so much problem with, or the next two walls, or you know, after that. But when I get across the street and it's the next person's house, he may not appreciate my, you know, my methods of, you know, however I'm using it. So that's stubbornness. Determination is I'm going to go that way, and I see, okay, here's a wall, and I look around and see here's a door, and there's a path that way, so I can get around. That's determination. So you have to see is, so if we're stubborn in our devotional service, that could be called over-endeavor. But if we're determined, then that's fine. So you have to, in other words, if false ego is involved, then, you know, unnecessarily, then that could be called possibly an over-endeavor. You know, especially if it's, why are you doing this? Because then everybody will say, I did something, or, you know, to prove a point, or, you know, something like this. It is based on something from the mode of passion or ignorance. But if it's based on the principles of religion, it's the direction of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it's approved by the authorities and by the devotees, then, you know, great endeavor there, even if it seems against all odds, is worth it. Like that.
Does it also depend on your nature? As you were saying last night, if you're a beggar on the street, then there's no point planning to have a new palace. So is it also a question of seeing your own capacity or your own nature and doing something accordingly? Or is it also valid to think that by my own endeavor it's not possible anyway, but if I have faith in Krishna, then
like that.
So
that's
both sides.
Yeah. Means, see, there's two discussions here. Right now we're discussing just situating ourselves. So that's been the discussion. For ourselves, we should not plan on, you know, high, big living if we don't have the conditioned nature to obtain it. You know, what is our conditioned nature? Means, if as a karmi, you know, we would have been, you know, mopping the floor down at the, you know, at the Kmart, then we shouldn't expect more now. Oh, now I'm a devotee, now I should be the CEO of Kmart. No, that would be foolish. Is we're satisfied that we're going to be mopping the floor somewhere, and we live with that. But for Krishna, then that's because that's Krishna's, then we can do wonderful things. If it's authorized and everybody's, then we do. But we see according to the situation what's there. You know, if there's indication that it's, you know, good, progress is there, then we endeavor for it. So that has to be seen. You know, it means in doing it, we shouldn't be losing our Krishna consciousness. You know, like I remember one devotee once, big program, Janmashtami program, so he'd get up in the morning, eat something, go out, collect money. Come back late at night, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, go to, you know, eat something, go to sleep. Wake up in the morning, you know, eat something, go out. Like this, he was doing this for, you know, some time. you know, because it was a big program and needed big money. Prabhupada asked him, are you chanting your rounds? He said, no, there's no time. I'm too busy collecting money. He said, what's the use of all your collecting? What's the use of it? Has no meaning. Like that. Your first principle is to chant Hare Krishna. Then, on top of that, you engage your nature, so you're able to collect, so you collect for Krishna. But you collect after you've, you know, the rounds have to be done. So if in that endeavor you can maintain your Krishna consciousness, great. But if in the process you burn yourself out, don't want to have anything more to do with Krishna consciousness, to get involved in management or this or that, what was the use? That means there was, you were expecting some kind of gain from it. And either not obtaining that, then you're frustrated. You did all that and then everybody didn't, you know, come forward and pat you on the back and say that was fabulous and this and that and praise you for the next 10 years for your 2 weeks of work. And so therefore, you know, you get burnt out. And so one has to see what is the motive behind it and if it helps your Krishna consciousness. You know, it may make it, may be intense. That's the purpose of festivals and, you know, special occasions, is that you push your limit so that you learn how to increase your limit. You know, otherwise the tendency is to get lax and just kind of fall into a rut. But it's to help you push the, you know, that threshold of excellence. You know, so you have to, a lot would depend upon your motive. You know, if in the process devotees are becoming disturbed and everything like that, then it means something's wrong. You know, you have this big plan, no one's taking care, no one's involved, and like this, maybe it's the wrong plan. You know, if everybody's into it, or, you know, some are into it, and, you know, obviously some who have proven themselves to be not team members or not so Krishna conscious, if they're not into it, that's another thing. But if those who have proven themselves, you know, to be, their opinions of value and their services have been, you know, important, if they say that, you know, what's the meaning or what's the use, then you should consider, you know. So we have to, then you might think it's not important. It needs to be adjusted. So, okay.
The word balance is good to keep in mind. The word balance.
Yeah. Means you have to find, means it should be progressive. That's the whole, that progressiveness is there. Then it's good. But it's always nice to have opportunities that you can and push forward, make that progressiveness, you know, more progressive. Otherwise, the tendency will do less. Another impediment is prajalpa, unnecessary talking. When we mix with a few friends, we immediately begin unnecessary talking, sounding just like croaking toads. If we must talk, we should talk about Krishna consciousness, about the Krishna consciousness movement. Those outside of the Krishna consciousness movement are interested in reading heaps of newspapers, magazines, and novels, solving crossword puzzles, and doing many other nonsensical things. In this fashion, people simply waste their valuable time and energy. In the Western countries, old men retire from active life, play cards, fish, watch television, and debate about useless socio-political schemes. All these and other frivolous activities are included in the prajalpa category. Intelligent persons interested in Krishna consciousness should never take part in such activities. So we just have to be careful, is that in our association, that the basis has some connection with Krishna. Otherwise, then, you know, time gets wasted. And then the desire for these things increase. Anything that we do then will create the desire to do it again. That's the danger. Okay, we've done now, okay. And then we see that's nonsense. But we've in the process created the desire to do it again. That's the weakness. So if we do devotional activities, then the desire to do that again is created. And if we do nonsense activities, then the desire to do those again will be created. So that's the weakness of this. So we should be careful. We should always try to bring whatever we can, you know, in contact with Krishna consciousness.
I might add that the need to talk with outsiders and beneath our lives, etc., without getting into this. Because I know most people talk about this, I suppose. How do we balance just not being really abrupt with it, you know, getting into the whole scheme of talking about this and that?
Well, you try to find, I mean, it depends upon what is the position of them. If they're people we have to work with, or if they're just acquaintances, or we just happen to, you know, be sitting next to them on the train or something. You know, so you have to see what's there. If there's a preaching opportunity, then you may go somewhat into their world to find a place. Once Prabhupada was talking with Graham Hill, and he was at the time, one of the probably the top world Formula One racers. And so then somehow another Prabhupada met him, and Prabhupada started talking about, I'm not sure it was in the 30s or 40s, the car he had, some particular, you know, it was some kind of car, and because, you know, he was a car bug. You know, so they got into talking cars. And then from that, then he got into, you know, racing. And then he brought it to the point of, you know, once the kind of conversation had been established and there was a nice rapport, then he brought it around to when you're racing and, you know, going very fast and, you know, you're going to, you know, all these things, your turns and all that, you know, don't you become afraid, you know, that it's a dangerous situation. And so then Graham Hill said, yes, he actually does become afraid. So he says, what do you do? You know, like that. So then somehow or another at that point, then he flipped it into, you know, being dependent upon God, turning to God, you know, and making like that. He just brought into it the element of God consciousness. You know, but that was 20 minutes talking all cars, this, that, and all that. Then he got into this, and then he talked for a long time. So if that is there, then maybe that you have to find out what is the field that the people can relate to. And then depending upon what they can relate to, then you can do. But if it's not, you know, it's just you meet people, being pleasant, being nice, and whatever's the customary thing, you know, you say, you know, hi, how are you, or good I might, or whatever it is that you're saying. You know, you just deal, because that's just proper interaction. The point is you should, according to the, you know, basically, you should deal. You know, like that. You should be, you know, pleasant and properly behaved. So then that's fine. You know, but you just have to see what is the balance, you know, so that you don't overly get involved in stuff you don't want to be involved in, you know, like that. You have to see, you know, unless they know, if they don't know that you're a devotee, that's one thing. If they know you're a devotee, then they'll say all these things, and with time they'll probably start to ask you for answers, you know, to problems in their life and that. But the problem is you're going to have to hear about their life before they're, you know, how you say, ready for you to give an answer. So you have to see what is the relationship and what is the position. Does that make some sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to judge each. Yeah, like that.
This sort of brings, I mean, I had a word of this, but sort of brings to mind a number of experiences where I'm doing this and I'm just about bringing them down and then another overzealous devotee charges in and ruins the whole rapport. You're just about to get into the nitty-gritty, if you like. And
why would they charge in?
An excuse, overzealousness.
But I mean, if you're already there talking to them, why they would talk to them?
Well, I find that some people don't understand the etiquette. My understanding when I even first come in was, somebody's dealing nicely, then that's it, it's fine. Not everyone has that attitude. Some people have this knowledge and it's sort of like, it's my turn, I've got to speak it, you know, to whoever, even though someone else is talking.
They can't. But it should be, someone's talking, then it should be left, unless that person's having some trouble, you know, sitting over there with, you know, they say a born-again Christian or something. You know, you may need some backup, you know, like that. But if it's going nicely, then it's fine, you know, like that.
Excuse me, how do we deal with, when we hear of things such as this, how do we deal with the aversion where we go out and we think, oh my gosh, here's a kami, or here's someone that's not a devotee and they're talking to me, and then there's that aversion, and then we also feel that we have to connect everything with the Lord, and then we hear that we should not engage so much in economic development, and then we take the stance of, okay, then I won't work, I'll stop working, and then the idea that we're doing devotional service but at the expense of the government supporting us, and then the question of religiosity and how we have to be religious, and then how we have to be seen as good citizens for preaching purposes, how people see us as a, people, you know, I get people saying, oh my gosh, you're a Hare Krishna, but you're working. I thought all Hare Krishnas don't work. You know, that they just basically live off the government. So, it's where do we, how do we balance it, or how should we be? Just, you know, what are the basics for us in terms of dealing with these types of things?
The thing is that, see, if one is engaged in full-time service, you know, at the temple and preaching and all those things, a few people might complain you're living off the government, but most people would understand is that priests and those kind of people don't work, you know, so it's natural. And even if they do say, why? You know, your priests work? You know, what denomination are you? Your priests work? They have a job? Some do, you know, like that, but many don't, you know. So therefore, then, you know, just tell them that. But if they're not doing temple work and they're not working outside, then they're living off the government. That's not proper. That's not good. Because then, what's their condition nature? If they want to say is, you know, my natural occupational duty is a lazy bum. Okay, then that's fine as long as they acknowledge that. But then, as a lazy bum, then, you know, then they naturally wouldn't have any say in anybody else's life, because what does a bum know? You know, maybe he could tell you, you know, which sidewalk is better in which season or something like that. But otherwise, you know, they shouldn't say anything, you know. But so that will be more the problem. It's not the ones that are fully engaged and, you know, taking, you know, and because whatever, Brahmins are supported by others. They live off of charity. So that's fine. But then that means they're fully engaged in Brahminical duties. Their 24 hours is taken up between their varna and ashramic duties. But if it's not, they're just using the time watching their television, sitting around and doing nothing, then that's cheating. That's a problem. So people can legitimately complain about that. That they can complain. You know, I mean, of course, you can get out of it, but they expect more from someone who's religious. You know, you can say, well, why? You have no people on, you know, that are living on the dole, that have no jobs, unemployed. Yeah, but they don't expect devotees to be like that. They expect them to be more progressive. You know? So then they should either be working at something that creates their economic development, or they're living from this and they're fully engaged. But we find that, you know, there's a few at both ends, and the problem is the ones in the middle. There's a lot of them in the middle, you know. So that's not good, you know. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is that if you are out with, you know, if you're out as a devotee and all that, and people meet you, then naturally they're not going to talk about all kinds of nonsense. You know, they're going to, you know, either know who we are, or they're going to be inquisitive. They'll be talking about the mud on your forehead, or, you know, the bed sheets you're wearing, or stuff like that, you know. But if you're out working as in a job with the karmis, then that's just the field you work in. You have to put up with it, you know. It's just like cow gives milk, it also kicks. So at the same time, is if you're going to work in the karmi field, then you have to understand the karmis are going to, you know, talk whatever their karmi stuff is. So we're pleasant. We don't over-encourage, you know, long, useless conversations, you know. But we're always pleasant and all that, you know, what to do. You know. Is that okay?
Yes. I've just heard two or three devotees now just mentioning that all the this aversion to karmis and stuff like that from, you know, to live, to have an aversion to them.
Mm.
So, you know, treat them as they are, who they are, but don't encourage myself with them. Is there something wrong with that?
No, it's not. See, you're talking about people who have lived in an environment where they don't have to deal with them at all. So if you've always been in that environment, then you're accustomed to that. But if you've ever spent some years where you don't have to deal with them, and then suddenly you're dealing with them again, then you might find the difficulty of having to work out, you know, just to balance that aversion. Like that. But that doesn't, it happens in many, it doesn't happen in all. You know, it depends also on your nature. If you have a very outgoing nature, very, you know, gregarious or like that, generally you won't find that problem anyway. Like that. Though you'll keep kind of in control of the conversation to make sure it doesn't go off into too much useless nonsense. But if you're just always been in the environment and you've been able to balance it, then it's fine. It's not a problem. But you don't prefer that association over devotional association.
You know. You touched on it earlier, just in regards to the light accumulating. I've heard that one who maybe worshipped demigod for benediction, for wealth, that they may receive that benediction, but it just means that they're getting an advance on what they would have got anyway. So in other words, they get it all at once, but in the future, they'll be the rest of the world. Is that correct?
I haven't heard that, because if you worship properly, then that is a religious process, and religion generates economic development. So you're seeing is that they're only getting in comparison or in relationship to the degree of their process. If they do a little worship with, you know, very minimal endeavor, then the results will be very little. But if you have somebody very seriously surrendered into that, you know. So therefore, if you stop acting religiously and act irreligiously, then you're taking out of what you would get. But if you're acting religiously, then that is just generating. That generates. You don't get it today, you'll get it later. You know, today you'll get it off of what in the past. So what you receive your past, you have to work. So what you receive it through, then that's proper. You're supposed to get money. So you could go out and get a regular job, and you would get the same money. You could go out and rob a bank, you get the same money. But the problem is if you did your work, that will generate in the future money. You rob the bank, that will generate problem. You know? So in other words, you're going to receive the present, your past money, through something you're doing at present, though the present thing isn't actually generating. That's generating in the future. But because of this overlap, we think my job today is making my money. But it's not. That money is already coming from before. Because otherwise, people are working and not getting money. Or people are working less than you and getting so much more money. You know? It means the top guys in the companies, you know, these big, big companies, they're not working an 8-hour job. They'll come in for a half hour meeting, you know, this and that. Sometimes they're very busy, a lot of times they're not. Their work is different. They're making so much money. Right? Like that. They're always thinking about it, but actual doing it is less. You know, and other people are working, you know, 12 hours a day and not making ends meet because they don't have anything from previous. They didn't perform enough pious activities in the past to generate income today. That's why it's everyone has to work. Like that. So you perform your duties. Since you have to work, perform your, according to your nature, your duties. Like that. But don't do that for yourself. That's what it's saying here. Is all occupational duties are not meant. They're not meant for economic development. That means that we look at, see, a materialist looks at varnashram as economics. A devotee looks at it as devotional service. It means you're going to have to do some service for the Lord, and you have to take care of yourself in this world. So what facilities you have are according to varnashram. Means the kind of gross and subtle body you have, which is your facilities, are going to fit into this, some into these categories of varna and ashram. So, and then from that you're going to get your results. So devotees do it because it's service to Krishna. We perform these duties to please Krishna. Materialist does it so that they'll get future economic development. So that's why it says that they're never done for economic development. They should be done because that's the way Krishna wants it. Religion means the law of God. So God's made the system, and God wants you to act within that system. That's why, therefore, because it's religious, it's according to God's law, then you get the result. But we're interested in going back to Godhead. The economics will come on its own. You know.
Came on my mind, so this is the idea that I'm getting from my actions now.
No, Karmani Mamsa also understands is that from the past I'm getting now, and then in the future. So if I just do good activities, maybe I'm getting some bad now, but if I just do good in the future, I'll only do good. And if I keep doing that, then eternally I will reap the results of pious results, good work. I understand I'm going to change bodies, but when I go to the next body, it will be a good situation, and I will be have all facilities for enjoyment. And then in that one, I'm pious, I continue. And then I'll enjoy through that life and the next, and it'll just keep going. Problem is you can't guarantee you're going to keep it up. Two, you don't know what is your past deeds. You know, so it's a faulty system. But at least it sounds good to a gross materialist. You know? Like that. But it's sinful life that you think what I'm doing now gets my money. You know, it's because of sinful understanding that people are saying, you know, that saying, you know, why don't you do something, get a job, you know, like that, do this, do that, or even devotees saying, I'll go out and I'll do this, I'm getting my money. No, you're going to get that anyway. Like that. What you're doing today, that's what's going to get your future. I mean, it's a natural thing. It says, I don't know if I discussed this here, but I think we did, but it's you work. Let's say this is Monday through Friday, right? This is what day? This is Thursday. So are we then this week we're living and paying our bills and getting our food. But is that off of this week's money? Right? Today is Thursday. And at the end of the day, I go out after work and go down to the grocery store and buy some groceries. And I go home and cook them and eat them. Is that from today's money that I made at my job today? Yeah, that's it. So I'm not living off of my work today. It's very obvious. I'm working off of last week's work. And where will this week's money be found? Not this week. It's there for next week. So this is on the small scale, it's there, but this is on the life. What you did last life is what you're going to be eating this life, and what you do this life is what you'll be eating next life. You know? And if you're very pious, you can increase, you can get some results now. And if you're impious, you can destroy good results now. Duryodhana, by his normal pious thing, should not have been killed, and all his brothers. But because of impiety, you know, also at that time, the son shouldn't die before the father. A mother should never see her children die. That's sinful. It means there's something wrong in your past. Like that. But because of, so therefore, and they were born in the great Kuru dynasty at that time, so they shouldn't have experienced that. But because of Dhritarashtra's attachment and Duryodhana's sinful activities, therefore, all their pious credits were destroyed, and there were none left. So therefore, when they're all finished, then Duryodhana and every last one of his brothers, the 100 brothers, were killed. Like that. So then, what to do? So like that, that you can do. You can play with it that way. But factually, what you're eating today is coming from before. But so then one would say, so why do I have to work, right? Because the nature is we're not religious, we're irreligious. But if we're religious, we see our nature, and it should be engaged in work, like that. But to do that for economic development, that's not so intelligent, but to do it to please Krishna, because that's Krishna's law. That's religion. It's God's law that you have an ashram and a varna, and so therefore you should engage in it. That's religious. And then you do that for Krishna. Like that. So then in that way. But then along with that is you're more than just a varnashram aspect, because we're soul. Varnashram addresses the conditioned nature for engaging in the Lord's service. That's actually what it's for. But you could forget that. But for us, then it's more obvious because you have the Pancharatrik and you have the Bhagavat paths. And those have nothing to do with social, you know, and economics, you know, like that. They're purely for spiritual benefit. So therefore, we see that we have time and we're able to engage in those activities properly. And then, you know, there are our duties according to varna and ashram, then those take up also part of the day, not all of it. You know, so then we balance all that, depending on what is our nature, what is our work, what is the thing. Then you might have maybe more Bhagavat or more Pancharat or more Varnashram, or, you know, or different stages of life, others will be more or less prominent. Right? Brahmachari, then naturally, you don't have so many responsibilities, so the temple life and all these things are more prominent, the study and all these. But then as grihastha, then you have to find what is the balance for you. And then as vanaprastha, then again, it opens up. So if we have this understanding, then we don't get so much. It means whatever security and protection you're going to have, it's already there from before. It's not generated now. Wherever you go in the world, you'll get it. But it's so designed, and we're so conditioned to how this place works, we think when it comes, it came through this. It's the medium, it's not the... And he walked through that door. So that door produced him. We have a magic thing that little 3-inch space between the door produces all kinds of stuff. You know, it produces people, it produces chairs and tables, and, you know, depending upon... You know, it's mystic. We're not quite sure. Sometimes this door produces buckets of prasad, and sometimes that door produces them. You know, it's a very mystical thing. You know, there's a lot in those 3 inches there, you know. No, it's just the medium through which he came. So you say, where did he come? You couldn't. The foolish person will say he came through that door. But actually we understand he came from his house and he came this way and he came in a car and he's got, and there's a whole thing going on. So we think, okay, I went out and I did my work today and that got me my money and I'm eating today. But actually no, that's the door through which the previous is coming. But we connect the door with the thing. So we can see, if we give that example, say that's foolish. But if we expand that into how it's coming here, then we'll say, no, but it's the same thing. We've already proved it. You work this week, you're not eating off of this. If you're on daily labor, okay, then you can say today, but halfway through, while you're at work, you ate something. You brought something from your house. It didn't come from today's money. So you're maintaining, the clothes in your body didn't come from the money you got today, unless you went to work naked. You know? You know, so therefore, you can see, even on a daily thing, it's coming from before. You know, and I've heard in, was it, there were some times in some place, I forget where it was, in Peru or something in South America, you had to pay the people after twice a day, because the rate of the money would fluctuate so much that by the end of the day the inflation was so much it would be less. So they would take their money before lunch, change it into dollars, go back to lunch and change and then get a lesser rate for whatever they got, you know, for the afternoon, like this. So, but still, you know, there's that time, there's that 3 hours or 4 hours. So we just apply this, but then the natural thing is, well, if that's the thing, why I should work? But that's a irreligious mentality. Religious mentality is, this is my duty, I do it. You know, I have my family, I have this nature, I do these things. But I don't, that's why I don't over-endeavor. I only do how much needs to get it done. You know, because whether I work 8 or 12, I'm not going to get more money. You know, I can get more of what I have in my bank account. That will then create less leverage later. So it's not by worshipping the demigods, it's by over-endeavoring now. You know, I work two shifts, I get more money, yes, but you're only getting more of your own money. You're not generating more money. That's what it's thought. You know, if I work 16 hours a day and then don't do any sadhana, then, you know, all I did was take one day out of what I would get anyway. And so that 8 hours that I could have used for sadhana and other things like that has been wasted. It's not that I've gained, I've lost. That money will come to you anyway. You know, instead of getting it over 5 years, I got it over 3 years. Okay, great. You know, then what are you going to do for those 2 years? You know, so if you're smart and you save it, yes. But then that means, you know, applying yourself now. You're religious. But the thing is it's coming in, you just think it's going to come in forever. And it doesn't. So unless you follow the religion of, you know, doing whatever you're supposed to do with your money, keeping it properly, protecting your money, then after 3 years you won't have money. So that 2 years, you won't have anything, because nothing more is coming in. You know, that money you got over 5 years, it was supposed to be 5 years. Then you have some other money that will come in from five on. You've taken that already. So then what to do? And you see, like this, easy come, easy go. Those who make easy money, it goes easily. Those who work hard, value it. That's a very typical example. You did also. No, I didn't tell it this time. But I can't remember last time. That in 1980, I think it was 1980? Yeah, it was in New York. And at that time, I think it was both the older Rockefeller and the younger Rockefeller were both there in New York. And so an article came out in the newspaper that the journalist had gone to the father. And he had asked him, now you're the elder Rockefeller, you're the wealthy one, you know, you're the one that's in the seat. And you're staying in like a, you know, a 3-star hotel, you know, a simple place, clean, nice, but, you know, no frills. And your son, who's the junior, he's in the big 5-star hotel, you know, living it up. So why is that? You know, you'd think it would be the other way around. And the father, you know, thought for a moment, said, it's a very simple thing. Says, he's born rich. I wasn't. So I value money. I know how what it takes to make it, so therefore I don't waste it. He was born rich. To him, money means nothing. So therefore he spends it. So like that. So money that comes easily, then we have a tendency to waste. You know? Because it's without thought, without religion, we got it. So it's without thought, without religion, we'll lose it. It's very simple. But if according to religious principles we got it, we'll be able to maintain it. Religion protects religion. And irreligion then breeds irreligion. Like that. So it's a very, you know, I mean it's these are the realities of life. And then within that you apply it. So the reality means I do this, I do that, Reality means I'll only get this much money. Reality means, so, you know. Okay. So, okay. Yes.
All right. So from the story of the senior and junior Rockefeller, you can assume that junior did some fires that could have been passed by. Therefore, we can also see that it doesn't mean if you're pious, you will remain pious.
Yeah, but if he valued and if he means money, the religion of money is it must be protected. Like that. Lakshmi is feminine, must be taken care of. So if we protect, then it will remain. You know? You see is that the people who are generation wise, like dynasty or traditionally rich, they're rich and you never hear about them. Like that. You only hear about the people who are newly become rich. And then after how long are they rich? Today they're number one on the list. Tomorrow are they? Queen of England has been on the top, you know, since as long as we've heard about her. You know, as long as they've been making this You know, they have Fortune 400. She's been on the list. As long as the magazine's been there, she's been there. Because traditionally, you know, I mean, their tradition goes back, some time. So they know all these big, big families there. Well, you never hear of them. You only hear of, you know, new people. They make it. They make a few bucks here and there. You know, and then you hear about it. You know. Then you don't hear about it. You know. So that's the thing, is they get it and it goes. Very few of them are able to keep it like that, because it's not gained by religious means like that. So therefore, how you'll keep it? Religion generates economics. Religion protects economics. So it's the only thing. So if you don't misuse it, like that. So the whole point is but. All this, what Prabhupada is pointing out, is the Dharma is meant for attaining liberation. Therefore, all these things of performing one's duties that will create a proper, comfortable situation in this world is only meant to get one back to Godhead. You know, why have a house and a family and money and this and that if it's not helping you become Krishna conscious? You know, if because you need those things and don't have them, you can't think of Krishna, then better to have those things and think of Krishna. But having those things should be part of your wanting to go back to Godhead, like that. The mind goes off and thinks of all these things. You know, the Brahmacharya's mind is always thinking of women. So then you marry a woman, and then the mind should now be able to think of other things. Right? Like that. So that's the whole point. So therefore the whole process of religion is only for helping us go back to Godhead. You know, we're only speaking this because of coming from a society that is irreligious by nature. And so therefore then to establish the importance of religion, that's as human life. That's human life. Religion is human life, but human life is meant for God consciousness. So you take from sinful into human, from human into spiritual, like that. So that's the. So depending upon what is the point, you'll emphasize more or less. You know, it means devotees have faith that going back to Godhead is the goal. So that's not the problem. Socially is the weakness. So then we have to say, okay, then we want to go back to God, who it matches that is a religious life, not a sinful life. You know, or it's not sinful, but based on sinful principles. You know, a devotee is living the same lifestyle as the unknowledgeable karmi. You know, what's the difference? You go into a devotee's house and you go into karmi's house. And the only difference is pictures, okay, instead of, you know, some funny pictures, they have Krishna on the wall. But otherwise, you look around everything else, it looks exactly the same. Same values, same everything, go into the kitchen, same thing, go into the bathroom, same thing. You know, all the same stuff. So therefore, then, the point is that are they understanding, are they seeing all that in relation to Krishna? If they are, great. But if they're not, then, you know, why do they have all this furniture like this? Why do they have all this cosmetics like this? Why do they have all the clothes like this? Why do they have the... You know, why do they do furnish their house and live in their house and follow a schedule in their house and eat in it? Why? And if they're able to explain that in connection with Krishna, fine. But just saying that you've done it, it's not enough. You have to actually, in your own mind, go through and see. Am I doing whatever is the nature of the family members and the situation and what, and my occupation and ashram, is it, does it add up? You know, is it coming as close as possible? Do I at least understand what I'm trying to get to? If I understand the goal, then I can try to get it there. If we don't understand, then it won't. So that's there. Then we might find devotees might feel more comfortable that their social interactions with each other in their families, between families, you know, the individuals in the temple and the individuals, they might feel more comfortable. You know, because we tend to leave that out. So we take materialistic life, you know, means, non-Vedic, you know, sinful materialistic life, take out all the, you know, take out the real sinful parts. And then engage that in the topmost, and then in between there's a vacuum. So it's sometimes a problem, you know. But the Vedas work on what will actually create community. Community is based on religion. We look at communities then we go, okay, then let's say we want to create a community here. Where do we look? Okay, well, Mormons have a nice community. The Amish have a community. Okay, then you have communes and other things in Israel like that. And, and Aurobindo Ashram, they have a community. But what's the common principle of all these? You're dealing with religion. They have a religious philosophy, and everyone there has the same religious value. You go to a Mormon community, and they all have the same value. The same endeavors, same everything. You go to the Amish group, same. You go to the, whatever, they'll same. So therefore you have a community. It means you have to have the common value, otherwise you can't call it community. Like that. So that is the point. So religion is for that. So we can take these other ones, but how much knowledge they address, how much do they deal with? The religious depth is not addressing every aspect. Some who are very, very orthodox, and yes, like with the Jews, there is a prayer for everything that they'll possibly ever see. They're walking down the street, there's a lame person, there's a prayer for it. They see a prayer for it. There's a prayer for it. They see a disease, there's a prayer for it. Somebody who's behaving sinfully, there's a prayer. It's for everything. And that way they'll be constantly just saying prayers. In other words, they'll be chanting all day. As long as they're awake, they're chanting their prayers. Like that. So they've engaged them, But then for the common person, everything that they're doing, but still it doesn't address, how do you deal with your toilet paper? How do you deal with your shower? What's the religious principles of the Christians, Hebrews, Mohammedans for taking a bath? Is there anything? Brushing your teeth, passing stool, passing urine, eating, washing your hands after eating. You don't have. It's not there. It's not there. Right? So then how do you deal with these? So then it means so much of your life you don't have religious direction for. How do you deal with your kid? How do you deal with your wife? How do you have sex? Any of them tell how to have sex? No. So therefore, then there's so much then how do you say it's religious? How can the Christian say his sex is religious? His dealing with his children is religious. What is the rule on it? Where is the scriptural? Where does it say anything? He knows what's irreligious, but does he know what is religious? So religion means it gives you direction and everything. But that's human life. That's just where we start from. That's the social human interaction. That's the social human social system. But just having a nice human social interaction is not the goal. The goal is God consciousness. So you see, Prabhupada always takes it. First he's saying it's here. Without religion, human society is no better than animal society. Then, as stated above, religion is meant for attaining emancipation, not for getting bread. So he'll always put the one, that it's human. Without it, you're an animal. So devotees are trying to engage animalistic life in Krishna consciousness. It can be done. The Prabhupada says, a child can do it, a dog can do it. There's that dog, it went back to Godhead. Shivananda Sen's dog went back to Godhead. Like that. So it can be done. But then if we say, but then there's no community, then what do you want? Because then unless everybody's following the conditioned life of a dog, okay, then you get the community, dog community. But it may or may not be so deep, like that. Most of the animals we associate with have such strong community. We're not known for keeping swans as pets or other elephants you know, others that kind of have a little bit more, you know, controlled by goodness, you know, cows, you know, so there's a little bit more of a strong sense amongst them. But otherwise, then, you know, you don't have, you know, amongst, you know, dogs and cats, you don't see much like that. So even amongst the animals, there's such a variety, so much higher end of lifestyle. So the whole point is human life begins with religion, and then religion is for God consciousness. So that's the direction. So it's not the other way. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha is not the direction for devotees. That's the improper application. It's what most people want. It's actually the process is dharma, moksha, bhakti. That's the direction. You know, artha, kama come anyway. You don't have to endeavor, they come anyway. Yeah. Is that?
And there's a supportive point for Swami Lakshmi coming out. It's statistically shown all these big lottery winners. After 4 or 5 years, 4 out of 5 of them, I think, had less money than they won. Than they started before they won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they just get, you know, it's happening, and then they just. There's a Marwari saying. They're one of the Indian business communities. A shallow stream floods quickly. You just put a little money into it and then immediately. So therefore, they know they can't, even though you'd like to, you can't give more money to your assistants. Because if you give, then they become suddenly big and they get spoiled. You know, they won't do work, they think they're big guys, you know, because you gave them a little bit extra money. And that's it. So therefore they have to be very careful how much and how often they give. Because otherwise they become spoiled. You know, like that. So the whole idea of the lottery is not to benefit people, it's to generate revenue. You know. So, you know, the idea of becoming rich fast without means who's buying the lottery tickets? Are businessmen buying the tickets? No, it's a common person who would rather not work, and so, wow, if I win the lottery, then I don't have to work the rest of my life. Yeah, but then the problem. Yeah. So it's meant for those who are not really realistic about life. You know? So therefore, it's a trick for them. So they get revenue off of that, off of alcohol, off of gambling, off of... The rich people aren't, you know, it means... They may, sometimes for fun if they're foolish, but the really rich people, they won't waste their time gambling this time. Established rich, they won't do that. Yeah. It's a waste. So they're tricks. So they're not worried about the social implications. You know, so it's projected as something very laudable and valuable, but it's not. Because you know, otherwise, if the government was worried about it, then they would stop it because it ruins people's lives. Gambling ruins people's lives. Alcohol ruins people's lives. They would stop it. They would ban it. But they don't because it gets revenue. You know, so therefore, then a few people overcollect at the expense of all the small people.
I think this goes back to what you said about the day, Maharaj, where the government's not engaged in pious works, but rather than they take the money from sinful money.
Yeah, so it weighs on the people. Therefore, you see, it affects those in the government positions. Because the money is from simple sources, so the reaction to those sins goes to the people who are, you know, living off the benefits of that money. So therefore, then we see that even though the guy was very nice now, after a while, then he, many times they go bad. Not that they were always bad, they may have been good before, but by the effect of living through the means of sinful money, the reactions go to them and it ruins them, their families, like that. Yeah. Like that. Yes?
Maharaj, you were saying before how religion means to do things properly. To what extent do we take the fact that you're saying that we need to learn all different aspects
about it live tonight, do it properly, do how much detail, like you're talking about washing and dressing and keeping the house and relating properly and all that. So as a devotee, you know, regular dealings and every day, to what extent do we take that upon ourselves to know that?
There's two aspects of it. One is the technicalities of it, and two is the essence. So the essence that everybody should take means the essence is I'm doing this for Krishna. But at least the basic, you have to know, why are we washing clothes? Krishna likes us to be clean. Why are we cleaning the house? Because he likes cleanliness. Why are we taking a bath? Because of cleanliness. Why do we wash our hands after eating or going to the toilet? Because of cleanliness. So cleanliness is a very important principle. Because cleanliness then will generate the mode of goodness, and from the mode of goodness then we can, it's illuminating. We become detached from material energy, we become illuminated in knowledge, we're able to progress nicely in spiritual life. So at least that principle should be understood in connection with, you know, whatever we're doing. That we should do. Then according to one's conditioned nature, then you can bring in more or less of the technical points. You know. But in any case, we should do our best that we get the proper result. You want to clean, then the clothes should be clean. So you should, if we know how to clean, great. If we don't, we should educate ourselves what that means, what it requires. You know, what kind of soap to use, how much soap we use, how long you soak it, all these different things. You know, so according to our ability, then those will get into technicalities. But the most important is we see its connection to Krishna. So even if we don't know all the different, but at least we know that this is, you know, how Krishna likes it in principle. So at least that much. Is that okay? Okay, otherwise, yes. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema ki. It's irreligious, it's against the religion of the Vedi. You know? So when you combine your hands and the Vedi, you have to do it in a certain way. If you put your hands on top of the Vedi and lift them up, the Vedi doesn't come with it. Right? So that's irreligious. You put your hands under the Vedi and lift up and it comes. You know, but then also you have to balance it. If you just put it one hand under the knees and one hand under the feet and lift, then you also don't lift. So you have to get the proper. So it's a science. Religion is a science. So you have to know what is a baby, where their weight is, you know. So if somebody doesn't know this, then religion would look something like this. Okay, take your right hand and putting it in, you know, in front of, straight in front of you, and then the left and left. Don't cross your hands like this. Very important. Don't cross your hands. Then, depending upon the size of the baby, then you're looking for the point of balance of the baby. Then, depending upon that, you want to give some support to the back and some support, you know, to the, you know, the thighs and like that. Then you will spread your hands at a distance depending upon the size of the baby, right? Then but when you put your hands under the baby, don't do it too fast because it might create some abrasions on the back of the baby. You know, it means. This is, and then we hear this, we laugh. But if somebody doesn't know, this is what you have to say. So since we don't know what religion is, then when religion says, the scriptures say, this is how you're going to deal with a husband or a wife or a child, then we say, all this ritual. Then you can understand this is just abject foolishness. If you knew, you'd do it.
like Bhakti Bihari said. He has learned that since he was a kid. We're talking all this, you know, philosophical, technical stuff, and he's just going, this is so obvious. I've known this since I was, you know, a little kid. You know, for us, we don't know. So it has to be explained, and in a scientific way. So therefore, that's what religion is. In the spiritual world, you don't have to have books that tell you how to do it, because it springs spontaneously from the heart. Here, there's nothing spontaneous except, you know, sense gratification. And even that, it's only what you have the piety or impiety to perform. You know? Like that. So you have to be taught what is an object and how you deal with that object. So therefore, it seems like so many rules and regulations. That's why sadhana bhakti is there. Is you practice it. By practicing it, then it becomes natural for you. Then that practice becomes secondary for the more primary things of remembering Krishna. Like that. So in the beginning, therefore, the vaidhi is prominent because you have to learn how to deal with it. And once you know how to deal with it, then you put into the aspect of the spontaneous aspect of remembering Krishna and doing it for Krishna. It's just the automatic, that's what Prabhupada says, automatic. If you understand it, it's automatic. If you don't understand it, then you can come up with so many ideas. Then we end up with, you know, the one that's here. Four, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. It means you're just doing it because you're supposed to, you don't know why or how to connect it. Or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. Bingo. That's the Western mindset. Is that either do it because you're a fanatic, you know, it can't explain it, or throw it out the window. So this is why Rupa Goswami has mentioned this right in the second verse. Because this is what the neophyte tends to do. He either takes the rule, and because he's a Prakriti Bhakta, he only sees the externals, he takes the externals, and that is religion. So he's very religious, that's good. And then the other person can't relate to that, throws it all out. They're irreligious. Of the two, better to be religious, but they're both bogus. The real thing is connected to Krishna. Unless it's connected to Krishna, then it has some life, then it has meaning. So the religion, Prabhupada gives so much religion, but it's not given in a way that it is separately defined. It's defined only in relationship to Krishna. Therefore, then we take it as philosophy and not as religion. Because, but it's sad dharma, or eternal religion. It means that religion which is connected to the Supreme Lord. And because then if we take it as philosophy, philosophy is theoretical, it's not practical. Therefore, when I want to get into practical life, that's something else. My Krishna conscious life is one thing, and my practical, you know, real life is something totally different. But that's what Prabhupada is trying to save us from, is that our devotional life and our practical life are synonymous. Even though it doesn't look like you're sitting in the office with a bunch of, you know, non-devotees, you know, it doesn't seem highly religious. But if the purpose of doing that and the method how you go about doing that is according to the scriptures, then it's religious. And if you've connected it to Krishna, then it becomes sadharma. So that is what is being offered. So Prabhupada blends it in so nicely, because otherwise in the tendency we'll just catch the separate thing, just get into the whole emotional trip and completely forget the philosophy. You know, because Christianity used to have some philosophy. I mean, at least you still have a few theologians that, you know, have libraries full of books that they read on philosophy. But other than them, probably none of the others know that philosophy exists. You know, what's your philosophy? Well, you know, be a good person and, you know, be nice and do your duties and, you know, and like that. Great. You know, but philosophy should be a little deeper than that. So Prabhupada's blended it, so he's given it here that we can follow. But the problem is we have a tendency to overlook it. You know, either either by ignorance or by our own avowed, you know, personal philosophies or understandings. Like that. Is that okay? Anything else? Or,
yeah. Just a question about preaching.
Means it should be you preach to the audience. So if they don't like what you're saying, means you're not addressing them as an audience. So that's the thing. You mean, of course, truth has to be spoken, but at the same time, as you try to find a way in which they will accept it, that's good. That's best.
So you should preach in a way where
the audience will appreciate it. Yeah, like that. You have to speak to it. That's a good. That means the teaching method is good. No, that's another thing. Then the trick is to get them to want to know. You have to create interest. Like that. You know, like that. So you try to create that. And it's good. Okay, this should be last. Then we should...
It's okay.
It means if you're going to be answered in 2 minutes, then it's okay. If it's longer than that, then we should wait.
No, it's okay,
Maharaj. Oh, okay. So ask tomorrow, you heard? Maybe you can ask
tomorrow. Which one? The morning or you?
Us.
Tomorrow's what day?
Thursday.
Yeah, it should be. Morning. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayate Gaura Premanandam.